Murderous Codependent, a Sherlock BBC fic by Rage Proof Rock and read by Let's Go Friday. It's an uncomfortable and telling measure of the depth of Lestrade's parental guilt that he acquires not one, but two kittens. Amelia, ruthlessly suppressing her 1/16 French drama, had refrained from any particularly traumatic weeping when her father had, again, missed the bulk of her birthday celebrations. Instead, and with a calculating witchery she had half to inherit it from her mother, she'd released one delicate tear and stared up at him with a brave smile, amber eyes red-rimmed with her disappointment, and said, "It's okay, Daddy." Which was how he had ended up at Dulwich Council's fucking animal rescue trying to find some kittens. He explains how his daughter has been asking for a pet for ages, how she's horrifyingly irresponsible for a young child, and how he would like a kitten, the very cutest one, to ameliorate the obvious psychic damage he's done to her. It's also how he ends up discovering that it would be easier to adopt another child to give Amelia the goddamn younger sibling that's never happening than to get kittens for his daughter. The boot-faced cow at the Animal Rescue Centre hands him a stack of documents to fill out and tell him that first they'll have to arrange a home visit, quiz him and anybody else who lives in his household on their experience with animal care, as well as weigh in the fact that Amelia is, after all, a young child who may or may not be prepared for the grave responsibility of playing with kittens. He stares at her. "Are you actually serious?" he asks. Her response, aside from being arctic, is to the affirmative, which leads to the final disaster of the day, his accidental crippling of New Scotland Yard's tactical abilities. "What's wrong?" Sally asks as soon as he staggers back into the office at 1:30, looking bleak and having fantastic visions of his daughter selling drugs or herself and telling every junkie and John she meets and allows to abuse her that the only reason she's like this is because her father, the detective inspector, oh ironies of ironies, was shit. Clutching at his hair, Lestrade says, "I fucked up. I missed half of Millie's birthday." Dimmock appears out of nowhere. "Didn't you say you were going to get her a cat?" "Animal Rescue won't give me a cat," Lestrade moans. Making a thoughtful noise, Sally says, "Oh, true, you'd need to have started the paperwork on that ages ago." Because apparently nobody at the Met has anything to do other than gossip about Lestrade's parental failings, Anderson chooses that moment to sashay into the major crimes room, at which point Dimmock and Sally give him an unnecessary sit-rep. From there, it's only hop, skip and a clusterfuck around Lestrade's desk for them all to be scrolling through Gumtree, looking for the least morally dubious place to acquire guilt-related pets. Most of the cats look wretched or sad, and Lestrade vetoes any listing sans photographs because he'd rather not show up at a crack den to find a horrific scene of animal abuse, frankly. "Oh, how about this?" Anderson asks, reading aloud. "Kittens available. Gorgeous. One black, one ginger, and both terribly bright. Have all their shots. Inseparable. Must be taken as a pair." "Well," Sally said, "that's perfect, isn't it?" The cats, when Lestrade sees them, are sort of generically adorable the way all tiny animals are. The black kitten is slender and long like a snake, spine elongating like a spring, and his pink tongue rolling out of his mouth as he yawns. He's utterly fearless and scampers up onto the highest point of the room to inspect Lestrade with ice blue eyes. His friend, a sweet and much smaller yellow thing that will grow into a ginger tom, is cocking its head to the side and examining Lestrade in a thoroughly harmless, effortlessly precious way. "Now," Mrs. Hudson says, fluttering around him, "my grandson did write up the ad correctly. You know they must be taken as a pair." "Right, sure," Lestrade says and reaches for the yellow kitten. 5 minutes later, with Mrs. Hudson patching up the triple claw mark across the back of his hand, she clucks at him. "Oh dear, I should have mentioned, dear, that our Sherlock's a bit protective." The black kitten is delicately licking his claws, probably trying to find every drop of Lestrade's blood for his consumption, and keeping his long tail wound around one of the yellow kitten's paws. "You'll have to forgive him, though, Mr. Lestrade," Mrs. Hudson continues. "They were both the runts of their litters, you know, and they both never had a friend until the neighbours found them and brought them to me." She, however, is allowed to reach down and rub a thumb over the crown of the yellow cat's head, affectionate. "And John is ever so tiny, you can understand why Sherlock would be a bit tetchy." Lestrade glares at Sherlock, who doesn't bother to glare back, just flicks his tail menacingly. Lestrade doesn't know anything about animal psychology, but honestly, John looks a bit embarrassed about the whole thing, making an apologetic chirping noise and an effort to pad up to Lestrade, which goes abortive when Sherlock tumps himself in a possessive heap over John's back, purring excessively and pinning the smaller cat under his weight. "And if I try to take just one, I imagine I'd never recover from the blood loss," he asks, mostly joking, but Mrs. Hudson stares at him very seriously and says, "It would be terrible, Mr. Lestrade. Tommy's just starting to get his stitches out." "Great," Lestrade says, and in another one of those moments where he reconsiders his qualifications for fatherhood, takes home to his daughter a pair of murderous codependent cats. Amelia, when presented with the cats, shakes at such an alarming decibel and for such a long time that Lestrade actually thinks she's dying. The cats are similarly unimpressed and remain curled together, cowering in the carrier Miss Hudson pressed on him. And Lestrade's grateful for it when Amelia launches herself at him, crying, "Thank you, Daddy! You're the best daddy in the world!" Obviously, it's a flagrant, emotional, manipulative, and positive reinforcement, turning him into reflexively buying her things to win the chemical high of her adoration, but that doesn't make it any less effective. It's a short hit, though, and Lestrade's barely managed to give her a squeeze before she's rocketed away from him and to the carrier, falling to her hands and knees to peer into the dark mouth of the container. "Do they have names?" she asks. "Can I name them?" Lestrade goes over to her. "The black one's Sherlock and the ginger one's John. And be careful with John, Sherlock's mean." "Excellent," Amelia says, fearlessly sticking her hands into the carrier. "I love mean ones." Carol is watching him with her fondly amused face, his favourite of all her faces, and one, depressingly, that he sees more now that they're divorced. "When I said you could buy her a guilt cat, I don't remember allowing for multiples," she tells him, watching Amelia and Gambolingo after Sherlock and John, dashing around the room and discovering all the fascinating and dark new places to claw up and hide. He leans into her side, murmuring, "Apparently they are not to be separated." Carl cocks an eyebrow. "Really?" "Really," Lestrade repeats. "So you've got our daughter gay cats," Carol says. "Violent gay cats, Carol," Lestrade corrects. "Violent gay cats." Carol laughs, and giving him a fond kiss on the cheeks, she says, "Good job then, darling," before breaking away from his side to say, "Now, Millie, are you going to introduce me to your new friends or what?" as she goes after her daughter. For all that Mrs. Hudson had not been exaggerating about Sherlock and John's unnatural feline attachment to one another, Amelia, too, had not been exaggerating about liking the mean ones. She and Sherlock get on in their own way, in the sense that Sherlock attempts to crush her affection, and Amelia obliviously continues to love him despite his obvious revulsion. John, on the other hand, spends the most of his time being as lovely and agreeable as he'd seen at first blush, watching Sherlock's antics, which include everything from property destruction to prestigious disappearing and reappearing acts, with mild amusement and complete calm. At night, John likes to sleep at a window in Amelia's room overlooking the road from the second floor, and Sherlock doesn't seem to sleep at all, just prowls the halls in the house and takes care to walk all over Lestrade's face every single time he stays over and sleeps on the sofa. "I was reading a book, Daddy," Millie tells him one morning after a particularly robust night of being bullied by his daughter's pet. "It's about cats who solve mysteries." Lestrade, seeking zen and comfort from Carl's shitty as usual tea, mumbles, "Cats solving crime?" Amelia leans in. "Yes. Do you think that Sherlock and John could?" Currently, John is lying in a puddle of white gold sunshine, flicking his tail minutely and praying to himself as Sherlock pounces after it with unfailing interest. So Lestrade amends his views on them to dumb, violent gay cats. "No, darling, I think probably Sherlock and John are just ordinary cats," he says. Amelia looks disappointed, but only for a beat before saying, "Oh, well, maybe the neighbour's new cat will solve mysteries." Lestrade gives her a look. "Or just be friends with John and Sherlock," Amelia amends, grinning cheekily. "New cat?" Carl asks, brushing past and setting down a platter of eggs and a dish of toast, rubbing at the sleep in the corner of Lestrade's eye. Honestly, he sometimes doesn't know why they ever bothered to get a divorce. The only thing that's different is Carol gets less in alimony than she used to take out of their joint checking. "What's its name?" Amelia, reaching for a piece of toast, says, "Moriarty, isn't that a very pretty name?" "Of course, sweetheart," Carol says and looks at the wall clock. "Oh, you'll be late, Greg." He spills the rest of his tea, still hot enough to burn it inside of his mouth, and he kisses Carol first, then Amelia next, and as he's out the door. He's already in his car, feeling uncomfortably like he's being watched before he realises he is, by what must be the neighbour's cat, a sleek grey thing with mean eyes perched on the hood, staring straight through the windshield. "Oi!" he says to it. "Off you!" Lestrade swears the cat grins at him before darting away, round the side of the house and towards the neighbour's yard, but not before he's drawn the Irish Sherlock, who's plastered himself to the front window, mutely hissing through the glass. Keenly aware that he sounds insane, Lestrade calls to John, perched next to Sherlock at the sill. "If the neighbour's cat ends up dead, you two are the first ones I'm arresting. And the car must not be terribly soundproof, because as he's pulling out the drive, it's to the sound of his daughter's furious shouting." The end.